Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hi, welcome to the Wandering DMs live cast. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today we're going to be talking about clerics, one of the main primary three classes present in Volume 1 of original D&D, but one thing that I'm personally a little bit infamous for is I prohibit them from player characters in my games in the original edition Delta House Rules. So we'll be talking about that today.
This conversation is sort of almost like what caused this whole live stream to happen, right? Like, year after year, I feel like you and I have had this conversation in front of various audiences. So hopefully that means we're well practiced for today.
I think you're right.
All right. So,
I have a on the Delta's D&D Hotspot blog spot, I have a page dedicated just to this issue. And I've got, a 13 bullet point list of things about clerics that personally irritate me. And when I removed clerics from my game, things finally felt right. And I've had at least a couple of players say the same thing, of things feel smoother and more like pulp literature. And so, Paul, when you run a game with OED rules, what are players' reactions when they find out there's no clerics the first time?
It's definitely the most surprising difference point, right? Of all the, we have a little card, like a postcard size printout of what is OED that I hand out to folks. And the one bullet point on there that is most surprising to people is no clerics. And they often ask, why? Why no clerics? And I can tell you my explanation, which is sort of a weird, probably very trimmed down version of your points. But I think I'd be kind of curious to hear from you, Dan, like if you had to pick the top three, like what are the top three reasons that you don't want clerics in your campaign?
Well, I feel like philosophically, if I'm going to decide on a rule or a rules change, like I want the thing that gets me to make a change is if the change falls into both of two categories, both a realism / world building reason and also a gameplay reason. And the clerics hit both of those buttons for me. Is when I do world building, clerics are always a major problem. They started out in Volume 1, obviously, Catholic priests. Mm-hmm. The level titles are all from Catholic theology. Most of the spell list is from Catholic theology. The holy symbol is specifically a cross. And so when I try to transition that kind of stuff into a fantasy world, I'm constantly grappling with what is the church like? How does it interface with the government? Do I now have to make a pantheon? I have to make a bunch of gods. Is it possible to have a Lovecraftian, despicable universe around that? Or is that physically not possible? And then, so there's a whole category of reasons like that. And then secondarily, for gameplay purposes, there's a major problem of siloing the healing. Is you've got to have a cleric. Someone's got to spend their time on that. They probably need to spend all their spell slots on healing or everybody else is aggravated, and reasonably so. And if you remove that responsibility and allow everybody to be carrying around potions of healing, that distributes the responsibility. When the cleric, there's no one person that can go down and then lose all your healing, which is really a travesty.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so the combination of opening up a bunch of different possibilities for world building and kind of freeing up the campaign in that way, and also removing the one person's responsibility for healing really makes things go a lot smoother, I find. So that would be my elevator pitch, I think.
Great. I mean, that's pretty similar to, I think, what I tell folks at the table. One, that they don't really fit into the inspirational source material, right? If we look at like Appendix N, right, there's no, I always point out, none of these stories by Fritz Leiber or Jack Vance or whatever, they never include a goodly priest who heals people, right? That just doesn't exist.
And wears armor. Right.
Sure, but I don't think you even need that distinction. Like, yeah. a guy who worships a god and heals you just doesn't exist. Yeah. And then secondarily that it cleans up a lot of sort of problematic rules. That's a lot of just odd rules that make the game unpleasant. You mentioned the healing one. For me, the big number two is turning undead. Why do you want to take a whole class of enemies and just give a player an ability to roll a die and eliminate them? That just seems ridiculous. No one just turns orcs to dust. Why should you get that for undead?
And if you look at Gygax's writings later on, right off the bat, like a lot of his adventures, starting with Keep on the Borderlands, like all the evil areas have to have some kind of special power. The undead are particularly difficult to turn in this area. So you have a whole bunch of rules hacks because of the issue you just said. And then you move to Gygax's later games, like maybe Dangerous Journeys, mm-hmm. and he's writing things like, oh, in this game, there's no automatic way for priests to destroy undead. So, you know, have that. So even he clearly thought it was kind of overpowered from his later writings, as far as I can tell. Right. Having the undead just get veto power is a real bummer from the DM's angle.
Yeah. Yeah, and as you know, I have a penchant for including the undead. It's one of my favorite enemy types. So, I hate having players in my game that can just wipe them out totally. with a roll. So funny thing is, I've gotten now used to sort of explaining this to players at my games. And so one of the things I like to tell them is, and this is just, you know, nonsensical, just a sort of little made up fantasy in my head, that in the original book, right, there are three classes: fighting man, magic user, cleric, and the thief doesn't come in until supplement one. And I like to tell them that we interpret that publication as meant to be a replacement for the broken cleric class rather than an addition.
Great. Yes, totally.
Yeah, not that it says that anywhere or there's any reason to believe that might be true.
Right.
But I will say it hurts me a little bit to remove clerics because in my mind, just from a nostalgic point of view, clerics are a classic part of D&D for me. And there's also, I like something about the parody of four races, four classes. Chucking the cleric is a little bit painful for me, but I've come around. I've come around to the point of like, you know what? It's fine.
Yeah. And I think if you look at other games in the tradition, they tend to orbit around this warrior, wizard, thief trio. And, you know, you see that in the original Diablo, when third edition made generic classes, that was exactly the trio that they had. I tend to play lots and lots of D&D and like not a lot of other games, but I tend to find this trio popping up in lots and lots of places. And it seems like cleric is kind of an odd man out for your what seems like the most obvious pulp fiction fantasy simulation.
Right. So I want to pick a little bit on the healing problem. So a lot of those games, I think, end up taking the healing and just wrapping it into wizard. Maybe wizard has a spell that heals you or whatever. I think your take is a little different in just there are lots of healing potions. They're readily available. I think it's a pretty good take. But I want to talk a little bit about sort of the alternatives just because I think that the having this one class that has to spend all of its time worrying about healing is actually a problem, I think, that a lot of people notice in various editions of D&D and have tried to fix it repeatedly, but never gone so far as to just eliminate the cleric. So I'm talking about things like healing surges or... I think there's versions of D&D where you can like just, you don't have to memorize healing spells, but you can convert any existing spell into a healing spell.
Yeah, I think third edition does that.
Does third edition do that? Okay, great, great.
Yeah, it's a D20 system, yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the problems they're picking at there is that healing just doesn't really fit well into a Vancian magic system. Would you agree with that, or you think I'm crazy?
Well, I might have to think about that. Yeah. I think my take on it would be it's so important that it winds up blowing every other priority out of the water. If you can keep yourself healthy, then that winds up being more important than any other spell.
Right.
Right. So, and that winds up just sucking all the air out of the room as far as what you want to spend your magic on.
That's why I pick on it not fitting in a Vancian system, right? So in a Vancian system, you have a set number of spells each day, right? You're going to memorize this many spells, whatever. So even if you do something like you say, okay, well, you don't have to memorize the healing spells, but you can convert other spells over to healing. I mean, you're still sort of saying all of your daily allotment spells are ultimately going to become healing one way or the other. Sorry. If I compare that to other systems, like, say, I'm thinking of Warhammer, where... spells are a check, right? They're not, you can try and cast as many times per day as you want. Maybe there's negative outcomes if you fail, and so maybe you don't want to try all the time, but still you can try. In those cases, it seems kind of okay to have a healing spell on the list, because maybe you'll use it, maybe you won't, and it's not a big deal. It's not like wiping you out. Whereas in D&D, you need this constant flow of healing, and so it's just going to eat up all the spell slots, so why do clerics even have other spells?
That's a good point. That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny, because I've a couple times now, for me, the original big selling point of getting rid of clerics and just following your lead here was the Book of Spells. Awesome. Yeah. Book of Spells is a great, great product. Takes all the OD&D magic user spells, boils them down into just very concise statements, very usable, great play aid. Definitely recommend you go check it out. And then I kept thinking, well, maybe I should do the same thing for a cleric. If I just bothered to do the legwork that Dan did for magic users for clerics, then I would have that. And then I crack open my book of OD&D spells and I'm flipping through them looking for what are the cleric spells and how would I use them? Besides the healing, there's not a lot.
Yeah.
Their spell list is pretty short. There's maybe 6 spells per level, and very few of them jump out at me as I gotta have that spell in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that I totally agree with that, and I find that when I remove clerics, only 2 things ever bother me, and that's remove poison and remove disease. Once in a while, I'm like, yeah, there ought to, I need to provide some way to remove disease. That's actually the only thing that I feel hits me as far as gameplay when the clerics are gone.
And you haven't just added potions for them?
I can't remember.
Okay. Because that's what you did with healing. Might as well do it with cure disease. So there's a couple spells.
The poison, there's a potion for that comes out of mythology, and... the disease that you can hire a doctor, I think, is what I currently have.
Nice.
May or may not be trustworthy.
That's great. That's yeah. it's a little Warhammer-y.
Yeah.
So let me just pick your brain a little bit on the couple of spells that I really do miss. One of them being Speak with Dead, one of my favorite spells, and I'm really sad that's not on the list.
Well, that's interesting. Why is that?
It's such an interesting spell, right? Because it's an information gathering spell, right? So it's not a combat spell. It's for in between times. It's a mechanism for the players to get more clues as to what the heck's going on. It's very targeted in that. I can speak with this dead body, so the information is implicitly maybe not trustworthy because it's got to be from the perspective of this person. And just in your average D&D adventure, you find a lot of dead bodies lying around. So, I mean, it's a pretty useful spell.
That's interesting. The AD&D DM's guide has this sample dungeon, right? That has it has a map and it's got 3 rooms detailed. And there's been a number of different published. Here's the complete version of that dungeon. And one of them, I think it's on Dragon's Foot. And I think they've got it titled the Temple of the Red Priests or something like that. I read it, and there's at least 2 weird things about that. One is that it's extremely high level, Like the Gygax's thing in the original DM's guide is clearly low level. It's skeletons and rats and goblins, and then somebody made a version whereby it's like major devils and stuff like that. And the second weird thing is that half the text is devoted to what happens if the players cast Speak with Dead on this body. Every single area and every single body has half a page of text describing what that particular body will tell you or know. And so at least the last time I considered that, I was like, oh my God, what a pain in the butt to have to specify in your text the knowledge of every single dead body just because of Speak with Dead. I'm glad I don't have that in my game, is what I thought.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. I mean, that does seem like overkill, specifying what every person includes. Unless, like, you're relying on it. Like, if the adventure is relying on the players will definitely have multiple Speak with Dead access, and it's a major part of the adventure, I could see that. But, like, otherwise, I don't know. It feels to me like a great place to allow the DM a little leverage to invent. To just sort of
I can see your point there. And there's kind of like a murky, mystical, dangerous, look beyond the curtain there. I haven't missed it. I see what you're saying. I haven't missed it in a long time.
So the interesting thing is it's also happens to be missing from the BX spell list. And when I was running BX, I house ruled it back in.
Oh, interesting.
So it was very specifically on my change list of here's an addition. You have this spell. There's one other spell I want to pick on, just because it's an interesting topic to talk about, and you'll be surprised to hear that I miss it, which is Silence 15-foot radius.
Okay, so that's one of the ones I specifically like being gone.
Yeah.
I really like that being gone.
I also think it's problematic, and we've had this discussion several times.
Right.
So what I want is everybody be stealthy spell, a sort of weak version of invisibility 10-foot radius. I don't want the nuclear destroy this enemy spellcaster spell. I think that is a misinterpretation of Silence 15-foot radius. It ruined the spell. But if you go back, I wrote a blog post many years ago now about the history of Silence 15-foot radius, and in the early printings, it doesn't say anything about not being able to cast spells. So I would love a spell that is just the stealth, like a beneficial stealth buff. That's sort of a little bit better than send the thief forward and not quite as good as, you know, invisibility sphere.
I agree with that. I think that's the best possible interpretation. I think I agree with you looking at volume one of the original book. That is a completely sympathetic reading of what's there. Is that it's an auditory invisibility spell. That seems interesting in a way that shutting down enemy casters doesn't. And I really dislike the advanced use light to blind somebody and use silence to shut down spellcasters. And I do agree with you. That's the best interpretation of that spell. I would be a lot less aggravated if that was people's expectation with the silence spell. Yeah, and I mean, if you add that to the wizard spell list as a thing, that I'm not that doesn't bother me any more than invisibility.
And that's where I end up, right? So after looking at the cleric spell list and thinking like, how would I translate all these over into a format similar to Book of Spells? What I end up with is if I just took these two spells and added them to the wizard list, I'd be pretty happy.
Yeah.
And who needs
that
clerics?
That makes sense to me.
Cool.
Yeah.
So what about you? What reactions have you received from your ruling on no clerics?
Yeah, it's interesting. One really early on that sticks with me is someone that I'd played with for many, many years and played D&D agreed is that they got done with one session. They went, oh, yeah, this feels right. Hmm. This feels like a pulp 1920s pulp fantasy story playing out way more than the cleric class being present. I don't have anybody that's ever really super offended. There's a little bit of surprise, but I've never had anybody super offended by it. And that's really gratifying. So it is true that sometimes I play with newer players to D&D, so I could You know, I could have some ride through the room naked on a horse, and they'd go, "Oh, that's, I guess that's what D&D's like." But I mean, they're happy to have healing potions available, mm-hmm. and you know, and one of my current players, of course, then there's always some kind of smartass who's going to be, "Can I take my fighter and play them as a religiously dedicated fighter or something like that?" Right. Mm-hmm. And of course the answer is yes.
Yep.
And maybe that turns into something in the campaign or not. But that's perfectly fine, but they don't have miraculous powers.
You're reminding me now of a funny story of, we had a reader of both our blogs who emailed me at some point, I think he emailed, about how he had, or maybe he emailed you, I don't remember how the story goes. Point is, had read your blog, was convinced, was running OED, no clerics, then started to incorporate Insanity Cards, which is a product I make for layering in Insanity effects into any RPG.
A great product, and I will point out that in the most recent issue of the OED House Rules at the start of this year, I added the top recommendation to use Paul's Insanity Cards if one wants an Insanity mechanic. I believe that's on page 6 of the awesome. DM's Rules. Really great product. Everybody that plays it winds up getting one. Highly recommended. Go get Insanity Cards.
Awesome. Well, thank you for the plug. So the funny end effect here was he's using your no clerics, my Insanity Cards. He has a fighter who's slowly going insane and is developing this delusion that he believes there are greater powers. And so the DM, and he starts praying to them to please, you know, gods of whatever, help me in this situation. And the DM decides on a fly, I'll just roll a small percentage chance that something happens. And sure enough, rolls it and says, "Oh gosh, a thing happens. Okay. Something answers your prayer." And then goes, "Oh no, I've invented clerics."
Yeah, that's one of the most delightful email messages, comments, whatever it was that we've ever gotten, and I am just 100% delighted for it to come through in that way. Yeah.
So I still like to have. So when we talk about no clerics, I like eliminating the cleric class, but I wouldn't eliminate gods. I wouldn't eliminate miraculous events, and I like doing those sort of on the fly. My big literary inspiration for that, my favorite sort of fantasy book with that sort of presence in it, is actually Elsbrag de Camp's Goblin Tower. He's got a character who's very much a thief. Like, you read it and you're like, yep, this is a D&D thief. And at some point, he ends up in some old ruined temple and he finds a statue, a small statue that he can pick up and carry, that has a god in it, that has no more followers anymore, and it's diminishing and it's almost completely eradicated, but is able to talk to the main character in his dreams, and is sort of omnipotent, right? It knows a lot of stuff, but it just can't be bothered often to help him out. So it's a very funny relationship, right, where he's sort of like got his own personal god who is very slightly helpful.
There's an item like that in Stonehell Dungeon, and my character that I was playing got it, and so I that story you just said is very very close to me, because my character was dealing with that for about a year.
That's great.
The crazed frog god in a statue mm-hmm. being in my character's head for about a year and being quasi slightly helpful. And it was interesting.
Right, but you're not basing the whole character around it, right? It's an interesting right. bit of flavor for the character. Likewise, bad guy clerics, bad evil cultists that do horrible things, love them.
Yeah, I do that. And so, you know, having read a lot, you know, having gotten into fantasy literature largely through Lovecraft, probably, mm-hmm. I want at least there the threat to be, maybe that's what the cosmos is like, maybe there's only giant evil gods, maybe.
Right, right.
Or maybe there's minor gods that are, you know, being imprisoned by them, or maybe there aren't any. Like, I want that to at least be a threat. Or something like Robert Howard's Conan of, you know, praying to Crom and being like, if you exist, you better help me, and if you don't, go to hell. Like, I want that to at least be a possibility for Conan in my world, mm-hmm. to maybe there's a god to help him out, maybe not. And I feel like clerics There was a real recent cartoon about that, I think. You know, clerics being able to say, here comes the miracle, here it is. Kind of wipe out the ambiguity of whether or not there's benevolent gods or not.
Right, right.
I like at least there to be the threat of maybe there aren't any. you know, maybe there's no gods, or maybe there's only evil gods, and I don't know which one is worse.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when I was running the BX campaign, I had a great character who was playing. At the time, I had house ruled in Brave Halfling's Paladin class because I wanted paladins. So I had paladins in there, and I had a player start to invent paladins. So just a little background. So when I was running with clerics all the time, generally people would always ask sort of, you know, well, what gods exist? And I would say, I don't care. Lots of them. You make it up. And so I had one player run with that. He made up this god Palanthor. And the funny thing was, the interpretation there was Palanthor believed that, or the followers of Palanthor believed that Palanthor was the one and only god, and that all other gods are either aspects of Palanthor, or more likely, evil demons trying to trick you. And I love that. I love that, like, oh, your benevolent god is actually a demon trying to trick you. You should convert to Palanthorism. So yeah,
I kind of like the chaos of that.
That was a ton of fun. Do I need a special class to pull that off? I don't think so. I didn't need a paladin to do that. There can still be the Church of Palanthor. I love those, that kind of like crazy church in a pantheistic system that's trying to convince you that monotheism exists.
Right. And I guess I should say, so, you know, my two points at the start of this were, it's hard for the DM world building to have clerics, and two, gameplay wise, it's good to not have the healing siloed. And then you brought in an excellent third point of it doesn't really, the clerics don't really match the pulp literature. And so I guess I should address that sometimes when we're discussing this, someone will come in with the counter argument, but if you look at pulp literature like Lieber's Fafhrd and the Grey Mouser stories, you've got the avenue of the gods, and you have all kinds of churches, and you have all kinds of priests. But my counter to that is when I read, you know, at least early to mid Lieber, it really looks like they're all scam artists.
Yep.
Is none of them ever have miraculous powers. None of them are fighting successfully in armor. It really comes, the whole Vancian, Lieber, Moorcock tradition really seems to be implying that the whole thing is, you know, scam artist basically. And then you have, as a culminating point, you have the very first Fafhrd and Grey Mouser story, which is probably among the most clearly D&D, enter a dungeon, try to get the treasure out of this tower. And there's two pages in which the holy man of the greatest of all deities comes in and says, my faith will protect me, walks in the next room, and immediately gets flattened by a falling wall, right? And he only exists in the story for about three paragraphs to walk in and say, I'm protected by my holy faith, and immediately gets squashed like a bug. And so it really reads to me like in that early pulp fantasy, clerics are kind of a joke. And so to turn around and have them be the one indispensable linchpin, I agree with you, really doesn't seem to reflect that pulp fantasy tradition. So I like, I'm, you know, I like being like Lieber.
Whenever we talk about Lieber and the gods, I always like to think of the one with, who's the god of the jug?
Issac,
yeah.
Issac of the jug.
Right, and just sort of this whole story around sort of the ultimately what turns out to be the creation of a false parable, right? A sort of a events conspire to make it look like something miraculous happened when really it was very ordinary.
It's a great story. It's a great story. I've read it many times. It's delightfully wonderful, and I think that it really communicates that tradition's impression of miraculous healers. Yeah.
All right, great. So, I guess any final thoughts on excluding clerics?
it seems weird for D&D, and obviously it's like it was a there at the beginning, and when I remove it, it feels better to me in many, many ways. And I find that when players play with it, they many times they'll feel, oh, this actually kind of feels more like it should have been without clerics.
Yeah, I agree with that. I recommend folks try it out. Come and leave us some comments here. Tell us how it worked for you or didn't work for you, or give us some arguments about why you think clerics are indispensable and we're totally off base. But for the time being, I'll keep not using them. Tell us how it did or didn't work for you.
Definitely.
Great. So I think that's all I have. Dan, do you have anything else?
I think that's all for now. We like to hear your comments, like Paul just said, and please subscribe to the channel on YouTube. That's super helpful for visibility purposes. And we will look forward to seeing you in another 2 weeks, 1 o'clock on Sunday. Every other Sunday is our schedule, and we'll see you then.
So long, everyone.